Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host and the podfather of your favorite hebdomadal podcast. Oh, I'm glad you're with us. I'd be stricken with asthenopia if I saw that you missed this week's show. Here's our associate producer, Kate, to tell us what's going on.
Hey, Tony. Here's what's going on. Systems and processes so your people thrive. Dylan Bassett helps you create your invisible infrastructure so you can quietly reduce burnout, increase efficiency, and make it easier for your nonprofit to grow. He shares the signs that your internal systems are weak, explains how to pick the right tools to complement your work reality, and helps you design workflows and templates that ease your team's cognitive load. Dylan leads Department One Solutions. On Tony's Take Two.
Tales from the Gym, 21 Degrees Tim.
Here is Systems and Processes So Your People Thrive.
It's a pleasure to welcome Dylan Bassett to Nonprofit Radio. Dylan leads Department One Solutions, a consulting practice helping small and mid-sized nonprofits strengthen their operations, implement practical technology, and build the internal systems that make mission work sustainable. The company is at DepartmentOneSolutions.com. It's DEPT, One Solutions. And Dylan is on LinkedIn. Dylan Bassett, welcome to Nonprofit Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm glad you're with us to talk about systems. This is something I think it's undervalued. I don't think we've ever done a show after 770 something on like systems. I mean, specifically on systems and processes. You know, lots of guests talk about having a process for this or that, but not a comprehensive conversation about system-wide systems. You have a strong belief that you say that systems create space for people to thrive. How? Why? Lead us into this.
Sure. Well, first, I'm honored to be the first "quote unquote" systems process podcast that you've done on the show, and I definitely agree that it is something that is probably undervalued and underrepresented, I think, in the general discourse about nonprofits. A lot of what I see in the space is fundraising, communications, and CRMs. And we definitely work on and with and within CRMs. But generally, the systems and process conversation tends to fall by the wayside. To address your question specifically about how I believe they create space is there are a lot of nonprofits that have tools that they need to work within or need to work with. Less nonprofits have tools that work for them and actually support them in their work. And so that's really kind of the key transformation that we at Department One help to bring about for nonprofits, where a lot of teams are sort of passengers to the tools that they have within the organization. They work the way they do because they have to fit into a system. And so we try to shift that more so towards what is the way that we work, and let's configure a system that supports that and mirrors the reality, rather than trying to fit, you know, a square peg in a round hole of the way we work and the way the system works.
Okay. So the humans don't need to conform to the technology. You're talking about processes that reflect the reality of how that team that we're talking about is working.
Exactly.
All right, cool. All right, so that's encouraging. You have the invisible infrastructure.
Yes,
you're kind of talking around it. I mean, we're hinting at it, but what's your invisible infrastructure look like?
So the invisible infrastructure is, you know, under this same umbrella that we've been talking about of the systems that power sustainable nonprofits. A lot of nonprofits don't really realize that something is missing until something breaks. And this could be a literal tool in itself, a standard process for the way that things are done. And then primarily as well, the cost of operating without structure in terms of sunk effort, sunk staff time, sunk cost, literally in technology tools that aren't delivering us value.
Or the thing that breaks could be a human.
Very much
Or
so. Someone leaving the organization. Yeah,
the human
exactly.
team, right? Somebody's
Yes.
burned out, a team is burnt out, they're underproductive, they're miserable. It could be a person or a team, or certainly, as you said, it could be the technology. But like, how do we know? Okay, so this is we're trying to create a happier life. You want people thriving,
Yes.
not just surviving, not just tolerating the technology.
Exactly.
Yeah, don't just, all right, it's okay, it works,
Right,
it
right.
works, it turns on when I get there in the morning.
Right.
But you are thriving people, thriving teams. So how do we know? I mean, aside from people like throwing laptops out the window or bashing them, with their shoes or something like that. Aside from those subtle clues that the technology is not working for us, what are we looking for that hints at we don't have the right tools supporting our people?
Yeah, the couple things that I look for are when we are supporting more of our work through like manual inputs than systematic inputs. So this is, could be anything from systematic like exports and uploads, which is a really common thing that we help organizations resolve, as well as the integration of the tools that we're using. Ultimately, we want teams to be able to deliver programs, steward donor relationships, plan at the executive level, having tools that support each of those kind of core work streams across the organization. And so a lot of the time, what we look at is what are the tools in our technology stack, which is just the array of tools that we might be using either across the organization or within a given department. How are they talking to each other? And really honing in on the areas that they're not talking to each other. So a really common example of this that's probably relatable to a lot of the audience is in the fundraising space. A lot of organizations have either a donor platform, a CRM, and an accounting platform that the go-between is them. And what we try to shift is that the go-between is no longer them, and the go-between is actually those systems natively working together. And what this enables is rather than someone having to check the donation platform every day, week, month, whatever it may be, to find donors, enter the donation in the CRM, account for it properly on, a QuickBooks or another accounting platform, and then go, write a reminder down in their notebook to send, a thank you note or give that donor a phone call. We build systems that all of that stuff happens automatically. So when we get a new donation in, it's integrated to our CRM, we get that notification, it automatically creates a task for someone to go and do it. And then maybe sets a task up for our bookkeeper to go and reconcile that in the accounting platform. That is a system where a nonprofit professional can thrive and focus on the work that they're meant to be doing, which is stewarding a donor relationship, not entering data into QuickBooks.
Okay, and I would add another level of interest, which is maybe it flags that process flags donors above a certain level, because that
Absolutely.
person we want to do a human call. If,
Very
if
much so.
for us, for some people, it might be a $50 donation. If your average is like 5 or 10, it might be 5,000. If your average is 1,500 or 2,000, and then so sends a task. You just got a $5,000 donation from this person. You can tap to see the record, or just here's the phone number, whatever you want. Okay, so you're looking
If
for
I
like
can add to that quickly,
yeah.
so when you talk about how we handle certain relationships, this is a bit of a sidebar, but it's definitely in the same ecosystem. When we talk about, how we handle or escalate relationships like above a certain donation threshold, for example, this is an extremely common use case. And a lot of folks, the word that people use for it, at least that I see, is segmentation, right? Segmenting our audience based on their capacity to support us. A lot of organizations do it based on that gift level. Some organizations do it based on engagement or a blend of the two. But what we're talking about is reaching different pieces of our audience with messaging that is more relevant to where they sit in our mission. And a lot of folks think this is a strictly communications issue where we need to have a way to message those people in a more relevant way. In order to message those people in a more relevant way, it's really a technology problem in that we need a way to identify what these different segments are, what these different levels of giving, what these different levels of engagement are. And the primary way to do that scalably and sustainably is through well-integrated technology.
You're looking for spots where humans are intervening between the technologies,
Yes.
and you're trying to eliminate those, like you mentioned, uploads or
Right.
manual entry of gifts or something like that in the accounting system, because the CRM doesn't talk or something like that. All right. Is there technology where we can do this with paper checks? There's still people, not, I don't write that many checks, but I am a baby boomer, young baby boomer, very, 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 very young, right at the cusp of baby boomer. But I'm sure I write more checks a month than you do. Suppose we're getting paper checks. Can that be like, can, is there a scanner? Is there a technology that'll scan that name and either add it to the CRM or maybe find it in the CRM, and then you have to manually create the record if it doesn't currently exist. Does that kind of technology exist with paper check gifts?
It does.
Or no. Or if it
It's
doesn't, if it doesn't, you can say no. It's okay.
less common, and the way that we account for that is, I'll use the word systems thinking. So at Department One Solutions, we're not communication strategists by trade. We're not strategic planners by trade. We are technologists and systems thinkers. And so, as part of systems thinking, the baseline, the 101 is we think about the ideal path, which is kind of like what we just described. Someone, submits a donation digitally through our online giving platform. We can easily hook that into our CRM and our accounting software. We also consider what are called edge cases, which are things that kind of fall outside of that ideal flow through our systems. So, in the case of paper checks, we obviously know that this is something that we're never going to get away from entirely, at least maybe not for another generation.
Yeah, you got to wait till a lot of people, a lot more people have died. Or I mean, for some nonprofits, it could be the typical use case if their donor base is very old. I mean, if their
Right.
donor base is 55 plus, the
Which
typical
is
use
perfectly
case
valid.
for,
It just changes what our ideal case is and what we spend
right.
more time investing into building a solid process for. And so when we look at those edge cases, we say, okay, this may not come in through the digital giving platform, but what's, if you think of the process as a bunch of steps and maybe we have a person kick one thing off, then the technology does six or eight things, and then we do one thing to wrap it up. How far can we get that technology to stretch along the lines of the steps that we need to take? And that's how we, account for something like a written check. And so, short of having it end-to-end integrated, it may be, okay, when we get paper checks, we know this is something that we need to do, say, monthly. We go and enter them in according to, their CRM profiles. And then from the CRM, then we can go and hook that up with our donation platform and our accounting platform. So there's a manual entry step, But again, there are some, it's a cost of doing business, right? There are some things that will be unavoidable, but we do as much as we can in those kind of edge cases.
Yeah, sure. All right. But so you're not aware of a technology that'll scan a check and find that name in the CRM based on the check scan.
I would caution against the technology that does that
Like it would be a
because.
proprietary, it would be a, I'm envisioning a proprietary reader. I mean, not just a
Right.
scanner, but the
Right.
part of the platform is the hardware where you feed checks in, ideally high speed, and it searches the CRM. Okay, is that, oh, you were
You
going to
would,
caution. You were going to caution.
yes, I would say
Okay.
for something like that, whenever we translate from like something handwritten to data, unless we're, we always want a verification step. So, and this is like the technologist, the systems thinking, when we, imagine something like a fantastic proprietary scanner that could handle all of these checks at speed, we would be careful not to automatically go and assign them to a record in our CRM because we could kind of misclassify certain donations. Maybe someone has the same last name but a different address and it puts them in the wrong bucket. And then we're having a conversation with a donor that they have no context of.
Okay,
So
so he's got
there
it.
are,
Right. And plus,
And that this,
there's the handwritten amount too.
exactly.
Suppose somebody leaves the zeros off or something, or
Right.
just is a messy writer, and you can't reconcile the number with the letter with the words. Okay, so you would want a manual step of reconciliation before the CRM and the accounting system get updated.
Yeah, this is a great business idea.
Is it? Okay, good. Well, yeah. All right, go. You run with it. I got my businesses. I'm publishing a book this year. I'm booked.
Amazing.
You think about it. You think about it. All right. But the baby boomer, of course, has got to ask about paper checks. What else?
Of course.
What else are we looking for? Like symptoms where scenarios where the technology could be pushed together more, fewer human interactions. What else are we looking for? Anything else?
So, I mean, there's a lot of different places I could go with this, be it like use case specific in terms of like the process that we're trying to conduct, or tool specific in terms of, what this is meant to do for us. A few very common symptoms are that I hear across different departments, across workflows, across tools is we're using XYZ tool, but we're not really making the most of it. To me, that is like the number one thing that I look for because there is a lot of underinvested effort in actually making these tools do what we want them to do, particularly with the advent of, just to name a few of, and Department One Solutions, we're system agnostic. We work across these tools because we're systems experts first, and a lot of these tools are really built in the same way. So if you're familiar with one, you can pretty much go pull all the levers that you might need to in another. But for
Okay.
example, your Salesforces, your HubSpots, your Monday CRMs, your Bloomerangs, your Neon Ones, all those types of tools, teams will get these tools in place and they will be shiny Excel sheets, more or less, where we have a list of a bunch of names and a lot of information and the tool, we have it, but we haven't invested in actually maximizing what we're paying for it. A lot of these tools don't come for free. Some of them do, which is very interesting from a technology perspective. There's a lot of, top right quadrant tools, industry leading tools that are starting to offer their products to nonprofits at significantly discounted rates or entirely free, for very robust technology, which is very interesting, and great from an implementer standpoint because I get to work with world-class tools for organizations that are really now making the most of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, mainly it's, we're looking for organizations that have tools but know that they're not making the most of them
They're
because a lot of
underutilized.
the,
We're paying for this thing. We're paying whatever licensing fee or, you know, depending on the size of the
Exactly.
tool, there might be consulting fees that go along with it, or, you know, 100 hours a month of, and we're not, yeah, we're just not taking advantage. All right. All
Yeah,
right.
and how that really impacts the organization and the mission is we're investing money in technology and we're not getting any return from it. And then we're also kind of forcing our staff to use these tools that do nothing in return for them. You know, if I'm going to go and plug a bunch of information into this tool and be forced to kind of abide by the framework that it prescribes me as a nonprofit professional, I want it to do something for me on the back end, whether it be automating a process for me, covering some, you know, lightweight follow-up, being able to generate a report that's reliable. But a lot of the time we get in, you know, get to kind of the first step of setting it up, and then the other operational and capacity needs come rushing back in, and we say, okay, you know, we'll get to this, and it
Yeah.
never gets gotten to, which is the
Yeah.
problem that we solve.
You're how the to-do gets done. Let's see. How do we pick the right tool? Well, it's not quite there yet. What can we do on our own? Like, what could we, as you've given us some, like, some symptoms of you know, what to look for, but what can we try to do on our own? Well, I guess one thing would be take full advantage of the system, the technology stack that you have got. Like, talk to the vendor. If you feel it's being underutilized, talk to the vendor for Pete's sake, and find out how do you do this other reconciliation function automatically instead of us doing it manually. What else could we be tweaking on our own that can better utilize the technology we've already got?
So before we get to systems, systems work best within a controlled environment. And obviously, we try to build systems that are adaptable and flexible and resilient to changing variables. But before we jump into a system, the best place to start is to begin standardizing processes. So the things that we
Okay.
do as a team on a week-to-week, month-to-month basis, start writing these down, whether it's how we plan for and deliver events, or what is our standard communication process for a new donor, for a major donor, for our monthly newsletter, for our annual report. Start writing down the how to make a peanut butter jelly sandwich steps of each of those processes, because ultimately, when you start that, then everyone begins executing the process in the same way, which helps efficiency. There's less questions. It's easier to onboard new staff. So that has benefits in itself. And that's part of what we do as well. That's the beginning of a lot of the projects that we do is what do we do today? From that, it becomes much easier to map that to what we need out of a tool. And so assuming that there are some elements of technology in that process that we've documented, we start again trying to expand the number of steps that technology can do for us. So if it's kind of, you know, for example, you know, a new donor follow-up sequence that we're gonna go and get in touch with them. If it's all right, it lands in technology and then I have to go manually send an email and then I put, you know, make a note that I sent the email and then create a task for myself to follow up. Where there are gaps in that technology, it starts to come back to kind of where we started, where we're trying to extend that technology from where it typically starts, either at the middle or at the very beginning, and extend that closer to end to end. But
Okay.
the best way to start is writing down the process that you've got now.
Like, it's kind of an audit, you know,
A little bit.
a little bit of it, and document it. But, you know, start small. Like, you can't document all your programs or audit all your programs. But, you know, maybe just in like a new donor sequence, for instance, or, you know, how does a gift get into the accounting system after the CRM, or you know, something like that. I'll tell you
Audit
what.
is a audit to me is a a gray word. It's very
Oh, you don't like that word?
I don't mind it because it's an accurate representation. It's not super fun. I like current state analysis or
Oh,
process
okay.
documentation,
Wait. Current state
requirements
analysis.
gathering.
Wait. All
Yeah.
right. So current state analysis. What was the second one?
Process documentation,
Okay.
developing SOPs, and then requirements gathering. And requirements gathering is basically taking our standard process and then saying, okay, what do we need from this process? What do we need the technology to do within that? And that's our
All right.
requirement of the given technology.
All right. So audit, that's two syllables. All right. Current
Yes.
state ana current state analysis.
Yes.
I agree it sounds a lot sexier than audit. Okay. Well, that's all right.
People hear
No.
audit and they think tax people, they think legal people.
Right.
That's not me. I'm much more
It's
fun
the
than that.
It's time for Tony's take two.
Thank you, Kate. A Tales from the Gym, 21 Degrees Tim. You may recall Tim. He's the gentleman, oh, might be 2 years ago now. So it'd be a stretch for you to recall this, but he was the guy who was telling everyone it was his birthday that one day in the gym. So Tim, I've seen Tim twice walking, one time from the gym, another time to the gym. As I was driving my car to the gym, he's walking shirtless. He's got his t-shirt in his hand, wearing a pair of shorts, sneakers, of course. But both times it was 20 degrees or like 21 degrees. So the second time after I saw him, I was in the gym, I was on the elliptical, and he came in. And I guess it was the third time I saw him walking by the window because I like the elliptical that faces the window. All the others face the center of the room. There's one elliptical that faces outward and it's right in front of a window. So I get to look out the window. And so I saw him coming by shirtless, 21 degrees out. So when he came in, I asked him, what's with the, I've seen you a couple times now. What's with the, everybody else is wearing parkas. And pants, of course. What's up with the bare chest in the 20 degrees? He said it's invigorating, and he builds up this something called brown fat. And he explained that brown fat helps keep you warm, but the way it metabolizes, it's creating heat energy in your body. So it's not just that the brown fat keeps you warm because it's fat. And it protects you from the cold weather because it's a layer of fat, but it's the way it's consuming itself creates the heat and that keeps you warm. And then he also explained that he uses a breathing technique from this guy called Wim Hof, who I looked up. And this breathing technique helps him avoid the cold of the pain. You hyperventilate and then you hold your breath. I read about it, but I'm not here to teach the Wim Hof breathing technique, but it's this series of breathing, different breaths and holding breath that you go through, and it helps you reduce stress and even pain. He said it reduces the pain of the cold. And then 21 degrees, Tim said he goes home and he does not take a hot shower like you would think. He takes a cold shower when he goes home. After walking, I asked him how long the walk is. He said it's 14 minutes from his home to the gym. So he walks home 14 minutes, takes a cold shower, and then he warms up by presumably putting clothes on. I didn't want to ask what he does after the shower. I don't really need to go that level of detail. What happens when you step out of the shower naked? It's not necessary. I have to look at this guy in the gym from time to time. So, but that's the story of 21 Degrees Tim. He likes to be invigorated, does it routinely throughout the winter. And that's Tony's take two.
Kate,
Oh yeah, I was supposed to give you a cue.
No,
Kate?
Kate, your story was making me cold. I'm freezing just sitting inside my house.
Yeah. Go take a cold shower. You can
Go take a cold shower. Oh, how's the snow by you?
melted now, but I had 14 inches in the driveway. All gone now. It got a little bit warmer and it rained for several hours today.
That'll do it.
Yes.
We've got buku buttloads more time. Here's the rest of Systems and Processes So Your People Thrive with Dylan Bassett.
Tell us a story. We've been talking kind of in the abstract because of the questions the questions I've been asking, things I wanted to talk about. But tell us a story about a nonprofit that it doesn't have to be a like overarching revolution in the organization, but tell us a change story based on improved technology and processes. Some systems, some processes that came to them that they weren't previously doing. Or they didn't just come to them. You helped them. You created them for them. Give us a good case story, case study.
A use case that comes up often is for service delivery organizations. So think of these as, for example, these are organizations like folks who help outfit low-income individuals to get their first job. Or a new job, help them with boots and outfit that they need for work. Organizations that provide legal aid, service delivery organizations, they tend to have intake processes. They may be done through a form on a website or through a piece of paper in the office. And then that form tends to be entered into some system somewhere. And then we do a lot of kind of manual follow-up based on that. And so one use case that gets brought up frequently is an intake and sort of triage automation workflow, where rather than maybe we have a Google form that sends to a spreadsheet, and then from that spreadsheet, we need to copy everything over into our system or a paper form that we go and then manually enter, building up a system where we have a form that's accessible. If you're in the office, you can use a device that we have. If you have your own device, you can scan a QR code or you can find it on the website. We enter that information in. It's automatically sending to our system, whatever it may be, a CRM or a program delivery system, where we are then creating a new record of a client. And what type of intake information, whether it be demographics or services needed or referrals requested, we capture that information and then we can triage it to the correct program specialist depending on the diversity of the programs that a nonprofit might deliver. So if it's exactly, addressing the issue or if it's a referral specialist, we can send that to the correct dashboard for that program coordinator. And then they can go and see that land at the top of their list and say, I need to reach out to this person. When they reach out to that person, maybe we have an automatic integration with our email, maybe not. But that might be one spot where they need to intervene in the system. They say, all right, I sent this email, and it automatically creates a follow-up task reminder for them to go and get back in touch if they haven't heard anything. And then through that system as well, we can track, almost at like a line item, like a tab at a restaurant of like, we help this person with this, we help this person with this, and then ultimately close their case and say, okay, this is a person we serve in XYZ way. And then that all feeds into impact reporting that we're accumulating over the course of a year. This is something that happens frequently. Just the nature of the organizations that I work with, a lot of them tend to be direct service delivery. And in my opinion, that is kind of the essence of, creating space for people to thrive, because then that program coordinator isn't so much focused on how they need to handle the information or what they need to remember or put in their notebook. Then we have a system that is supporting a program coordinator as they deliver services to a client or a constituent. And they don't have to worry about keeping track of it because the system does. And then at the end of the year, when our executive committee goes to put together our annual report, we've got great information about who we served on a demographic basis, when we served them, and what services were delivered to them, that we can then go and demonstrate on the development and stewardship side.
Yeah, you got your outcomes. Okay.
Exactly.
What's your background? You have some kind of systems background or engineering or
I do, yeah.
human factors? What are you all about?
I am, so my formal education is in information systems and entrepreneurship. I studied at the University of Minnesota. So I learned systems thinking, the system development life cycle, how to implement tools, how to understand the way that data behaves in systems. I was never a software engineer. I was never a coder. I was never a computer programmer. When I was coming through school, they told us explicitly, you are going to be the translator between people who don't speak technology and people who speak technology better than you. And so I interface between, non-technical people and either technical tools or, software engineers, coders, computer scientists. So that's my formal education. I spent a couple of years in working at a national bank as a business analyst, so doing exactly that, working with the business functions of the bank, helping them turn their business need into stuff that computer programmers could work from. Then jumped into corporate consulting, which got into a little bit more of the problem diagnosis, the assessment type work, the kind of consulting narrative types of work. And now in Department 1 Solutions, after a handful of years in the corporate space, I just knew that I wanted to do values-driven work. Always had a sense that I wanted to own my own business and do work that served a greater purpose. And so kind of just had a, straw that broke the camel's back moment at my consulting gig and said, I'm going to leave this, and made the decision to serve nonprofits almost exclusively. With no connections in the nonprofit space, no prior experience at nonprofits, no, not even a real good understanding of how nonprofits worked, just knowing that they make an impact, they do work that helps people, and I want to help them help people. And that was kind of the start of Department One.
Can you give a little detail on the straw that broke the camel's back moment? Like, what happened?
I just didn't have any emotion about the work that I was doing or the people I was doing it for. And this was also somewhat aligned with the pandemic
This was in
in like,
the consulting gig. Is
correct.
that where you were? Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
So it's corporate consulting. I'm working at a firm with like 50,000 employees in the United States. Aligns with COVID, those timelines overlap almost 100%. And there was just kind of this, everyone kind of went through it, this awakening of like, you're pinned at home, you can't leave the house, and you wake up from bed, roll over to your desk, do this work that you don't care about, and then repeat. And I was like, I don't want my life to feel this way. And so it was a mix of that along with some of the corporate consulting staffing practices in terms of utilization of employees or overutilization of employees, which if anyone's worked in consulting, they're probably familiar with. And so it was a mix of those things where I was like, my life is more than this, and I want it to feel better and more impactful. So yeah, that was kind of the moment of like, something needs to change. And it was less about the work that I was doing and more about the purpose that I was doing the work and the people I was doing the work for.
Had you worked with nonprofits when you were younger or volunteered or like what you just always knew nonprofits existed?
Nebulous, like I knew charities existed. I didn't
Yeah,
really
okay.
like understand the nonprofit as a business model. until after I had left my previous job. And no, it really was just a desire to do work that aligned with my personal beliefs, the things that I cared about, environmentalism, human rights, economic equality, all those sorts of things. I knew that those were core to who I was as a human being, and I wanted my work to be reflective of that. And it's a decision that's been validated many times over,
I'm sure, yeah.
because I'm sure you know this as well. When you do work that is really aligned with your purpose as a human, there's no friction or conflict between what you do for work and who you are as a person. And it just feels like it's just all an expression of me. And that feels really satisfying. The system side of everything, I've always just kind of been like a take apart toy kind of guy, like a systems guy, like stepwise type of person. And so
Yeah.
that fit well from an educational perspective. And now I get to apply this way that I feel like my brain has always been wired to, the values that I believe deeply at my core as a human.
Congratulations. I admire
Thank
the
you.
I admire the alignment.
Thank
Did
you.
you play with Legos when you were a
Oh yeah,
young
big
boy?
time.
You
Big
did. See,
time.
I thought maybe. All right. All
I was
right. Did you
Legos.
wait, did you go outside the Lego, the step by step and create your own
Oh yeah. Oh
design?
yeah.
Way to go.
I was making like battlefields and houses and like castles and universes, and had bikes and skateboards and cars and all that sort of stuff. It was always Tinker Toys.
Interesting. All right. So it goes back to the Legos.
Yeah, something like that.
All right.
And from an
I mean,
entrepreneurship perspective as well, there are a number of people in my family that would gladly share the story of when I started a vegetable garden in my parents' front yard, and was selling cherry tomatoes for like a quarter a piece because I was driven to make $500 in one summer. This was like, I think I was like 5 or 6 years old. And I was like, I just want to hustle. So now all three of those things, the Legos, the vegetable garden, have now kind of come together.
And the added dose of formal education. I love the
Yes, that
vegetable guy.
helps.
Yeah. No, I love the vegetable guy selling cherry tomatoes. Cherry tomato. Did you beat your goal? Did you make the $500 in the
I
summer?
did. There's a picture of me with five $100 bills and like a toothless smile. Like, I got it.
All right. That's a lot. Was that 2,000 cherry tomatoes, isn't it, for $500
It was a lot. I also
at 25 cents a piece? I think that's
I did some
2,000 cherry tomatoes.
housework. Yeah, I mowed some
All
lawns.
right, all
I
right.
did all that stuff. Yep.
At 5 years old, this is 5 year old story.
Whenever I feel like it was early grade school. So I somewhere
Okay.
between 5 to 8. Honestly, I don't even
Okay.
remember how old I
Okay.
was in
Okay.
like kindergarten.
Thanks for sharing all that. That's
Yeah,
see,
no
you get
worries.
down the Legos and the cherry tomatoes, cherry tomato in the front yard, not the back. There wasn't enough sun. What? There was not enough sunlight in the back.
There was a good patch of grass in the front yard that my parents were willing to sacrifice to my venture.
Look what that sacrifice led to.
Right.
What else do you want to talk about? Systems and processes that I haven't asked you, or you feel is important for us to know.
I think one of the most important trends that I'm seeing in the nonprofit space is a move away from some of the quote unquote nonprofit first technology platforms towards some of the more traditional industry leaders. Just to say, I'm not sponsored. I don't get any commission or anything from any
You
of these
can
platforms.
drop names. Okay, that's all
Yeah,
right.
yeah, yeah. So, for example, like HubSpot is a big one that I know many organizations use but underutilize. And that's a really, really capable tool. I have mixed feelings about Salesforce just because the user interface tends to be less intuitive than a lot of nonprofit professionals may do best with.
Okay.
And one that has been very pervasive in a lot of different conversations, both from like a work management tool, so something to help us manage our tasks, as well as a tool that can support CRM functions, is Monday.com. Part of the reason that I like Monday.com a lot is they offer their professional tier, which is like their third tier of a tool. It offers hugely robust automation capabilities, communications capabilities, the number of different templates and layouts that you can have, and custom fields. And it's a fully flexible system that they offer to qualifying nonprofits for free. And
Ooh.
so it's a tool that's extremely flexible. It's easy to use, easy to jump into their tutorial videos and their knowledge bases to implement for either a project management tool or a CRM or both. And it's free. And so a lot of nonprofits, at least that I've been working with, I know there are other tools out there that have similar offers. Monday.com is the one that I've got the most experience with and hear about very, very frequently.
I have a client that
But
uses Monday.com just for project management.
yeah.
But you're saying they have a CRM also?
Yes. Yep. They have a CRM. It's very flexible. And so, like, to someone jumping into it for the first time, it might
Yeah.
feel a little big blue ocean. But it has a lot of, third-party integrations with your donation platforms, with your communications platforms. It's also a communication platform in itself, has solid automation capability, and it's free. And, if you look at from a technology perspective, if you go look at some of the leading tools in the CRM space and the project management space, Monday.com is right up there. So from the
Interesting.
perspective of a technologist who works in these tools and has to recommend them to clients, it's hard to justify a decision that doesn't at least incorporate that as a consideration. So just something. And there have been organizations that have been deeply invested in Monday.com that I've arrived to, and they're paying for it because they weren't even aware of this nonprofit pricing offer. I don't know if that offer will change, or if they might restrict it further, or might add a discounted rate. But currently, it's free, and it's been working exceptionally well for a lot of different organizations that I've helped both optimize existing use and implement from the ground up.
Do you take advantage of TechSoup and their offerings for nonprofits? Some clients sometimes benefit from that?
So definitely, something I'm aware of. I have seen kind of mixed relationships. Like, I've seen organizations really make a lot out of it, and then some organizations not really have a great experience using TechSoup. I use it as a point of reference if we are in more of an assessment type exercise where we want to get off the tool that we're currently using and we're evaluating alternatives. It helps from a cost perspective to see what kind of discounts are available or what kind of
Okay.
offers are available on TechSoup. And we can incorporate that into our decision criteria, but in candor, it's not a huge kind of piece of my operating model.
Okay. Okay. All right, so Dylan, leave us with like inspiration around systems and processes. Where we can get to.
Where we can get to.
Thriving.
Yes, thriving. I think there is a misconception. Maybe I'm speaking to our donor audience that might be listening to this show. But give general operating. From where I sit, general operating expense is the thing that holds most nonprofits back, because that is the line item in the budget that tends to get invested in the type of work that I do.
The
And
technology.
as someone who is working in these tools and sees the transformation from a team that has tools that don't work for them versus a team that has tools that do. If you want your nonprofit, whichever one is closest to your heart, if you want your nonprofit to be successful, give general operating, give unrestricted gifts. Because those gifts can be allocated. Also, if you trust the leadership of your nonprofit, you should trust them to make wise decisions about the cash that's being spent. And if you don't, maybe consider an organization that you do have that trust with, or ask them, ask their program coordinators, ask their, their development director, their advancement director. If I give unrestricted, what are you guys going to use it for? And I'm sure they'd be happy to share with you their strategic plan and let you know what's on the roadmap. And some of it might include, yeah, we want to migrate to a new CRM. And I think a lot of those expenditures tend to be viewed as unnecessary or not additive to the mission. But in terms of reach and operational efficiency, ultimately nonprofits are businesses just like any other, and they need those tools, they need these systems, they need efficiency in order to be able to deliver on their mission.
And just sort of flip that to our listeners is, technology is an investment. It's
Absolutely.
worth spending the money to not only implement, but then continue to upgrade, maintain, because it comes together for your team.
I
And
certainly think so.
we want our
Yeah.
teams to be thriving, not just surviving alongside the technology, but thriving with it and spending our time on the human side
Exactly.
when things can be done at de minimis cost
Right.
faster by the technology we've got in this decade.
Yeah, that would be my big call to action.
All right, Dylan Bassett, from Cherry Tomatoes to current state analyst.
That's right.
Thanks very much for sharing.
Thanks so much for having me on. This was a pleasure.
No, I'm glad. The company is at departmentonesolutions.com. It's DEPT, the number one, solutions.com. And you can connect with Dylan on LinkedIn, as I have done. Thank you very much again, Dylan.
Thank you, Tony.
Next week, Savvy CSR Seeking. If you missed any part of this week's show,
I beseech you, find it at tonymartinetti.com.
our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. I'm your associate producer, Kate Martinetti. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez. Mark Silverman is our web guy, and this music is by Scott Stein.
Thank you for that affirmation, Scotty. Be with us next week for Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.